Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Jammed his finger, still in second base. X-rays negative right now currently, so sprain, strain, something along those lines. Hoping it's day-to-day right now, so nothing imminent with him. We feel like probably in a few days he'll be okay, maybe earlier. We haven't had the conversation yet, but obviously we got everything right before the game, so put him on the IL is something that's not good. So, but tomorrow I'll have more information on that. I didn't have time. Just with the early game and how late went, got in the tube this morning and everything is just happening too close to the game to know the exact information. But tomorrow, I'll find out for you.
So that was Tony Manzalino over the weekend discussing injury updates on both Jordan Westberg and Adley Rutschman. And Adley now is on the IL with an oblique, and he won't be back until after the All-Star break. That's usually like a 4 to 6 week thing at best when you got the oblique. And Jordan Westberg, even though he had the oven mitt on, he stole a base and then had to leave the game because he had a swollen finger. Said it's only going to be a few-day thing, but now you got a 3-4 road trip, a road trip that could have been 5-2 if you hold serving two games you had, but alas, you don't. And now with the hole you've dug so deep, you're going the wrong way. The state of the Orioles as they come home to play the Texas Rangers in the extreme heat at 6:30 tonight.
Feels like the baseball gods are speaking to these guys a little bit, does it not? I mean, every time they have what looks to be their signature win of the season, and we could go back to them rebounding from blowing an 8-0 lead at the Rays and then beating a Yankees team in the first game of that series. And then it's more injuries. It's more inefficiency at the plate. It's more fundamental brain cramps and just...
I didn't mention Hanley's injury, too. Right. So yeah.
It's elementary baseball brain freeze, right? From the catcher can't catch the ball to guys getting picked off. We're back to more of that. And the starting pitching is cratering. Like, we always knew it would. It wasn't going to be as terrible as it was the first 6 weeks. Wasn't going to be nearly as good as it was for about a 2.5 week stretch where it was top five in baseball. And they just don't have elite arms who can get swing and miss, who can get themselves out of a lot of jams. It is what it is. And I think now we're sitting here with July 4th rapidly approaching, and the heat is here, and it just kind of feels like to me that the walls are closing in. I mean, from the fluky Hanley injury to another guy hurting his hand going into a bag head first to Adley with an oblique, and those things are incredibly tricky, to it all sort of catching up to the bullpen too, and Cano being optioned out, and Baker's not going to be the bake show if you pitch him 3 of every 4
bake
days.
Show.
Right? Like it just kind of feels to me like some hard doses of reality setting in.
For sure. And if you just look at the road trip record of 3-4, that's not horrible when you consider the competition, but when you consider where the Orioles were at heading into this road trip, you can't continue to drop in the standings. And you had a game in which you led 8-0 and you lost. You had a game yesterday in which you led heading into the 8th inning and you lost. And there's the potential for a 5-2 road trip, and then you're feeling good about yourself, and it's a much different story. But you combine the losing road trip with those injuries and Adley Rutschman, where he was starting to figure some things out this month, and Gunnar Henderson's getting hot, but Adley's out through the end, and first half of the season, you know, into the All-Star break, and the starting pitching cratering with Eflin and Sugano, where that's just looking really rough.
Well, and then the other thing, which has been a consistency, is the inabilities at times of this offense. And look at the two games they had and they lost. They're up 8-0. They don't get another hit the rest of that game. They're up 2-0 yesterday. They should have had 4 in the first inning.
Sure.
Jackson gets picked off second base. They got like the first 4 guys on. They don't score again in the game. And they had like back-to-back opportunities. I think Carlson had a leadoff double. Didn't even advance him. First 2 guys walk against a lefty. 2 left-handed batters walk the next inning. Don't even advance advance them. Like, and we talk about the pitching being up and down, and it's going to find what it is, and it's frankly not that good. But they were never going to stay that good. The offense has been this for the most part the whole year, and
it's been it since last June. Yeah,
so like, this is who they are. And this is the reason why, for the most part, the consistent part is the lack of offense at times. And this is why they don't get the 5-2 road trip, because they can't add on after getting those runs. And so now, instead of 5-2, it's 3-4. And let's face it, they're 6.5 games back of the third wild card. Like, and they got to hop a bunch of teams. Like, they are who the they're. Bill Parcells, you are who your record says they are. They're 33-44 as we are about to hit July.
And tucked in the middle of all that was Clark Schmidt almost no-noing them.
Yes.
So, I mean, there was that too.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
And if he could, and if it was 1987, he would have gone the whole way, and he may have no-hit them.
And I just think and hope and maybe pray that they are being as cynical, for lack of a better word, as possible about their chances to salvage anything here, and that they're sitting back there in the warehouse analyzing all this, including their 1-1 now being out until the middle of July, and saying, let's start. If we're going to do something that might not be popular, and there's nothing they could do that would be as remotely unpopular as what the Red Sox just did.
Yeah.
Let's get around and start doing it.
By the way, a couple of things. First and foremost, the Royals have made some roster moves. They selected the contract to Chadwick Trump. They've put Maverick Hanley on the 7-day concussion injured list. And they have transferred Ryan Mountcastle to the 60-day IL. So those are three moves the Orioles just made. And also, you mentioned them almost getting hit. No hit on Saturday. Here's Tony Manzalino on avoiding the no-hitter.
Yeah, I mean, we take a lot of pride. I mean, every major league team does. I mean, nobody wants to be no-hit, whether it's by, you know, single pitch or multiple. So, yeah, I don't know if it's a sigh of relief, but it's more of just there's pride involved right there. So, you know, Gary saved their pride a little bit for the night.
Oh, yeah. They only got one hit in a 9-0 game.
Good pride. Did shortstop pitch in that game, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Pride.
He pitched better than he hits, I'll tell you that.
Well, the no-hitter was gone in the first pitch of yesterday, so that was a big step.
Yeah, Jackson Holliday. Yeah. By the way, got on base 6 times in this 3-game series. He can't run the bases.
If they can't teach this kid to run the bases next year, or whoever's here, hopefully under new management, like, come on. That should be a carrying asset tool for him. The speed, the natural athleticism. Can we teach him to get a lead? Can we teach him to read a pitcher? Can we teach him to read a pickoff move? Like, please.
I think it was Buck during the broadcast mentioned the fact the Yankees were trying to pick him off every time he got on. Yeah. They know that he's got issues. They were trying the whole weekend.
They know Kowser can't throw the ball, and they know this kid can't run the bases.
Yeah. They're like,
he's got a big arm. He just has no idea where it's going.
No. That was something.
Do you think, what do you think of him leaving his feet? I was shocked that Buck didn't have any issues with it. He called it a baseball play.
Which one? Which part?
Maverick Hanley and instead of sliding. Now, I guess he's trying to avoid the ball that's coming in, but it looked, shady's too strong of a word. It looked weird. It looked a little odd to me.
I think he got caught in between, because you can see in real time him thinking, how do I avoid this?
Yeah. Well, because the ball's up the line.
It's a terrible throw. Yeah. God knows it's a terrible throw.
I think it was just
odd to see he was almost almost prancing. Like a show horse, like galloping.
He was caught in between.
Yeah. You're talking about the base runner?
I'm talking about Jazz.
Yeah. Yeah, because he looked like, I thought he was trying to avoid
it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But it didn't look like on the back view that, like, I thought he was like going to the outside. And it really was more like straight up.
Because here's the thing. In his heart of hearts, how's he expecting that throw to be where it was?
Trust me.
Yeah. So
the third base coach knew it wasn't going to be a very good throw. I don't think he thought it would be halfway up the line.
So we have a big Monday show. We are done early because the Orioles play the Rangers at 6:30, which means Baltimore Baseball Tonight Live from Pickles, Bob Haney and Ryan Ripken at 5:30. Guest-wise, NBA season ended last night in Oklahoma City. Congratulations to the Thunder. They are the champions. The draft is Wednesday. Huge trade involving Kevin Durant. Earlier yesterday, our insider, Milk Hamilton, joins us at 2:30. Jonas Schaefer, it's the time between minicamp and training camp. We haven't talked to him since the Ravens acquired Jaire Alexander. We'll get Jonas Schaefer's thoughts on the Ravens at 4 o'clock, and we'll preview Orioles, Rangers, and maybe some early trade deadline thoughts with Matt Wyrick from the Baltimore Sun. Covers the O's at 5.
yeah, it's obviously another natural time to take stock of the Orioles. A fairly resurgent Rangers team, at least one that I think has hit rock bottom, comes to town. Another big series of games. And can the Ravens, I know we wanted to get to this last week and then they signed Jair Alexander. Could the Ravens run the table at home? How often did they do it? Maybe less frequently than you think.
Coming up next, we will look to, at the Yankee series as a whole. What do we think positively and negatively?
Eflin?
Yeah.
Eflin? How big of a problem is that?
That is no bueno.
Who's been saying trade him for weeks?
Yes. No bueno on Zach
Eflin. I
don't
care what you really get for him.
No.
Because whatever you get now, it's probably better than what you're going to get 5 days from now.
Zach Eflin stunk. Recap the series next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Here on the Fan.
Bouncing ball to third that should do it appropriately. It's Chisholm, who was one of the Yankees' big stars today. And the Yanks take the series with a real snatch-em-back victory on this Sunday in June.
Matt Viscaragin on the call on Roku TV. Orioles lose yesterday 4-2. They had a 2-1 lead hanging in the eighth inning, but the Yankees got three in the eighth. They lose 4-2. They lose 2 of 3 in this series, and that's coming off that impressive win Friday night, even though it was at Sagano who didn't have it, but they still, the bullpen was great. They win the game. Going to Saturday, almost get no hit. But Tony Manzalino, as we heard last segment, very proud of the pride the guy showed to get that one hit in the eighth inning of a 9-0 game. So they didn't get no hit. And then they lose yesterday. So they lose 2 of 3 to the Yankees. They fall back in the division. They're in last place, 12 games out. Takeaways from the weekend in the Bronx.
Well, the primary one is like we're now sort of back to, okay, we've seen them look like the second to worst team in the majors for a large stretch of this season. We then, you can talk about what they were a couple days ago, 17 and 14 under Manzalino. And then you can look at where they are right now, roster-wise, who's hurt, who's available, who's playing well, who's not, their deficiencies. We're going into July, and I think it's fair to say that this pitching staff is not built for a marathon, right? It's built for the occasional sprint. And that, more than anything else, as exposed, as I said, let's see what it looks like when you start playing division games in the heat in some of these ballparks, because there's a lot of that to come. They're not built for that. And Eflin and Sagano, in particular, this year's version of Eflin, are not built for that. And so anybody who would be inclined to buy in any way, shape, or form, I would say, who the hell do you think they're beating in the playoffs with this starting staff? And even if your goal is to add Alcantara or something like that, well, who's following him up? Like,
Grayson will be
you
back.
You want to start with Sagano, you want to start with Eflin. Because to me, Eflin's the bigger problem.
Well, Eflin's giving up bombs left and right. Like, he's been, save for what he had, that really nice start against the White Sox. But beyond that, he's been disaster more often than not.
It's fair to wonder if he's damaged goods and if the Rays knew he was borderline damaged goods when they traded him here. Because again, as well as he pitched when he got here, he quickly was on the IL, and then he's on the IL again, and then they barely trust him in a playoff game, and then he's got issues this winter, right? And then he's off schedule again and missing time, and now he's not missing bats. And
fair to say he was hurt in that playoff game. They hooked him. Like, yeah.
Something was up.
Yeah.
But he has not been consistently right since he got here, and you're talking about his lowest ground ball rate since 2018. We're talking about the highest hard hit rate of his career, 41%. His career, 37. We're talking about a guy whose home run rate has almost doubled from his career. 3.6 to 5.7, right? A career home run rate of 3.6. Now giving up 5.7. And this is another one who, like, it feels a little bit to me like Morton early this in the season, because what's supposed to be his bread and butter is frankly garbage, right? Like last year, his cutter was his his moneymaker. His cutter had a plus 11 run value. It was one of the better pitches in the league, right? The league batted 214 off it and slugged 345. This year, it's a league average pitch at best. They're batting 299 off it. They're slugging 667 off it. Like, they've hit five home runs off the cutter already, and he's throwing it less this year. Last year, they had four home runs off the cutter all season, and he was throwing it 28% of the time. That's a problem.
Well, you mentioned Charlie Morton comparing him to Zach Eflin. Look at their ERAs.
Yeah.
They are almost identical. It's a difference of, what, 0.2?
And remember, Morton, it was the curveball early. Yeah. Now, he's figured it out. But I don't think Eflin's totally right physically. I think
he hasn't been right since he came off the IL this year. Because remember, his first 13 outings in Baltimore, he gave up three earned runs or fewer. Now, since he came off the IL, it hasn't looked right. The ball is flying out of the ballpark. Outside of that start against the Tigers where he was great, it's been a mess. I'm more concerned about Eflin, but that being said, Sugano
he ain't built for this.
His trajectory is concerning me. He hasn't completed five innings in any of his last three starts, and he's coming off his shortest start of the year.
Somebody told me now granted, he hadn't been good for a while, but I guess he fell in pregame warm-up, Sugano, and then when he pitched, and then he just seemed to be real ginger on the mound. I missed it the fall, and nobody seemed to cover it, but I was told by somebody I really trust, they showed him fall in warmups, and then he seemed to be really ginger on the mound after that. Like, it's just a little shocking. Well,
look, he had an instance in that game where he walked back-to-back batters. I don't know if we've seen that all year long.
No. This is not going to, like, again, for people out there who think this isn't already a lost season, none of this is going to play in October. Mm-mm. Like, let's be real about what was built here and how it was constructed and how fragile it was to begin with. I think Eflin's going to end up on the IL by the All-Star break. Like, I if you told me this week, oh, he had a bullpen on Thursday and he's on the IL, I'd be like, yeah, of course he is. So, you know, for as much as he was what? The Athletic said one of the 10 most tradable commodities before the deadline. That ship is, I'm telling you, it's rapidly sailing. Because I don't know what you would look at with him right now in real time as a contender and say that's going to play for us. Like, it's not playing for anybody. I mean, he's in the bottom 3% of all major league starters in pitching run value, bottom 1% of all major league starters in breaking ball value, and bottom 23% in fastball value. Like, okay, some of the off-speed stuff is changing, but again, the cutter, everything played off the cutter last year, and the cutter's bad now.
So just to be fair for Zach Eflin, and it's hard to be fair, but he's made 8 starts since the start of May. Only four, half of them, you say are okay or better. The first start was against the Angels. He went 5, gave up 2 earned. That's not great. It's okay. Then he shut out the White Sox in 7 innings at the end of May, going 7 and not giving up any runs. So then he goes to Seattle, goes 6, only gives up 3. That's a quality start, the minimum quality start. And then the start in Detroit, 6 2/3, 1 earned. His last 2 starts, though, have been laughably bad, giving up 7 in Tampa and now giving up 6 in New York. The last 2 starts are awful.
I mean, it's almost July. He's got a 5.5 ERA.
Yes.
We can cut it up a lot of different ways.
But he can't get the ball.
He can't keep the ballpark in the park. And he's in the bottom 9% of all major league pitchers getting strikeouts. So I would say that's a... It's a late summer. It was winter until a week ago, and now it's summer. So good luck with that, with who's coming up in this ballpark and some of the places they have to go. Like, I got news for you. Do I think this is going to play against the Mets lineup? No, I don't. Do I think this is going to play against the Rangers lineup? No, I don't. Do I think this is going to play if he comes up against the Rays again? No, I don't.
It's not playing against anybody right now. I gave up 13 runs in the last 2 starts. And he can't keep the ball in the ballpark, as you said. Like, they were talking on the broadcast yesterday about pitching away from right field because it's such a short porch. What, he give up three home runs to right field on Saturday?
Second deck.
Yeah.
When the Rays trade you a starting pitcher, while they've got 5 starters at that point in time, I think, on some degree of on the mend, you might want to... You might want to have a real thorough medical examination of that guy.
Hey, he was really good last year until he wasn't.
He wasn't on the IL, yeah. When he wasn't broke down. Now, they got him for a playoff run at a trade deadline and sold you as someone who's going to help him in the playoffs.
Yes.
And they could barely get five innings out of him in the playoffs. They clearly didn't handle him right down the stretch. And this year, he came into the season hurt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the Orioles, they lose to the Yankees yesterday, 4-2. They're back in action against the Rangers tonight at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Baltimore Baseball Tonight live from Pickles. Bob Haney and Ryan Ripken at 5:30. But coming up next, NBA season's over, but here comes the offseason. The draft is Wednesday. We talk to our insider, Mo Hamilton, about the NBA next here on The Fan.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The Oklahoma City Thunder are your NBA champions. First time they've won, at least in Oklahoma City. The Sonics did win a championship before moving to OKC. And let's talk to our NBA insiders. We head to the Window Nation fan guest hotline. Moke Hamilton joins us now. Moke, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. So let's start with the finals and Oklahoma City. Are you focusing on them, a team that won 68 games in regular season, or are you focusing on Tyrese Haliburton? Looks like a ruptured Achilles after getting off to a quick start in Game 7.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think we should be happy that we got a pretty competitive finals, but obviously, you know, if you're the Thunder or you're a fan of the Thunder, much less a fan of the Pacers or Tyrese Haliburton himself, you don't really want to see things decided in that manner. You know, you would have liked to see both teams be, I mean, if not at 100%, at least have 100% of their firepower available. So it was definitely a devastating turn of events for Tyrese Haliburton and for the Indiana Pacers. The funny thing about it is until a decisive stretch in the third quarter, where the Thunder strung together a few stops by Lou Dort and Chet Holmgren, who was actually big for, I guess I would say, maybe the final 18 minutes of the game, actually. That game was really competitive, you know? And sometimes, you know, we've seen these Pacers over and over again when a team is kind of hanging around and they're within 12 or 14 points, you know, a toe on the line. So now 14 becomes 16 rather than 17. Then you get an and one on the other end. Like, sometimes, man, just those key stretches emotionally make such a big difference. So, to be honest with you, after watching that game and how it unfolded, I'm not sure that there wouldn't have been a different result if Tyrese Haliburton didn't succumb to that unfortunate injury. But, you know, injuries are a part of the game, and the Thunder did what they had to do to string together those stops and to pull out the win. So, congratulations to them. But I think that there probably is a little bittersweetness to it for them, just knowing that they didn't beat a Pacers team that was at 100% strength.
Well, and Moke, as if you expand that portal out now and sort of look into the future of the Eastern Conference and no Jason Tatum and no Tyrese Haliburton, KD stayed in the West, so there's that.
Damian Lillard as well, going to be out for an extended period of time also.
Yeah. We'll see if Giannis gets traded or not. But, like,
my Sixers are back.
I wasn't going to say that. Yeah. How wide open is it, and could the Orlando Magic be a team to keep an eye on?
You know, it's so funny that you mentioned Orlando. So I do think, like most others, that they gave up an awful lot to get Desmond Bane over there. But part of the reason why they did that is because Bane plugs a lot of the holes that they felt they had as a team. And no matter what happens in the regular season, in the off season, you need guys that can create their own shot. You need guys that can hit open shots off of catch and shoot opportunities. And I think the latter is really what sort of attracted Orlando to Bane in the first place. So did they overpay for him? Yeah, you could say that they did. But I think in him, at least on the offensive side of the ball, they're going to be getting what they thought they were having in KCP, right?
Yeah.
So I think that Orlando and Detroit more than anybody else are the two young upstart teams in the conference that should make some noise this coming season. All that said, if I'm the Cavaliers and if I'm the Knicks, I'm kind of looking at this thing and I'm saying, man, if I can't get it done now, when am I going to have a better opportunity? So I would definitely keep an eye on Orlando. I think that they'll probably be much better than a lot of people think. I wouldn't be surprised to see them in the top four of the East. You know, they're that good. Mm-hmm. And I think New York and Orlando and Detroit, I think they will all be heard from as well. And I wouldn't completely discount Milwaukee either. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as Giannis is somewhat healthy, they might be without Damian Lillard, but there are things that they can do. They do have, you know, some young guys that will be getting more minutes now that Lillard will be out for an extended period of time. And, you know, as long as you have Giannis, you know, Brooke Lopez, obviously they're going to have to bring him back. But as long as you have Giannis, I think you've got a puncher's chance. So it is open. It's not that, you know, where the Celtics, we thought the Celtics were going to go on this run where they were going to have a chance to win back-to-back and, you know, 3 out of 4 and all that kind of stuff. It's a bit more open now. And I'm really, really excited to see how it all unfolds next season.
Well, Jason mentioned the KD trade, and that news broke prior to Game 7 yesterday. Moak, what do you think of the fit, KD, in Houston? And what did you think of the trade compensation, too?
Yeah, well, you know, for Houston, I love the trade. You know, I think that if there's one thing that we should have learned from the Thunder this past season is that you don't rest on your laurels and don't – it's so easy to say, oh, you know, we're a young team. You know, Anthony Edwards, right? Like, oh, we're a young team. You know, we're going to be back next year. We're going to have as many cracks at this as possible. You know, if you told Sam Presti back in 2012 when his Thunder with, you know, James Harden and Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, when they were there in the finals going up against LeBron and his Miami Heat, you know, they probably thought that they were going to be back, you know, many times over. And here we are. You know, it took a full 13 years from that point for Sam Presti's team to get back there and to win. So I say that as it relates to the Rockets because they've got a lot of nice young guys there that they were able to hold on to in that Kevin Durant trade. And I think with Kevin Durant there, with Fred Van Vliet there, and with Şengün looking like, you know, the real deal, I think right there you have a triumvirate that's able to lead you right back toward the top of the Western Conference. And we haven't even talked about the scores of young guys that they have that showed such great potential this past season. So for Houston, I think the value proposition was it was an easy call to make considering what they gave up. And I was really interested to see what that final trade package was that sent Kevin Durant from Phoenix because it's sort of a good case study, right? He's 37 years old. You imagine that he's outside of his prime, but he's still so good. But he's 37 years old, and you're going to have to give him a big contract extension. So was there a team out there that was willing to give 3 or 4 unprotected first-round picks for him? Evidently not, which is how he landed in Houston in the first place. But I think all things considered, it's a pretty good deal for both teams.
We're talking with Moak Hamilton's Inside Access here on the Fan. Moak, let's finish here. The draft is now Wednesday. We've seen Desmond Bain traded. We've seen Kevin Durant traded. Will Giannis still be a Buck? How active do you think this offseason is going to be?
Yeah, I mean, I will say how active will the offseason be, you know? I'll say this about Giannis. If it is that he's interested in going elsewhere, nobody knows that. They've done an excellent job of keeping it under wraps. If there are any conversations whatsoever about him being traded somewhere, nobody knows, right? So based on that, I would have to say that I expect him to remain with Milwaukee. Now, obviously, it's a very long offseason. I'm old enough to remember, you know, when Paul George and Carmelo Anthony were traded, right? You know, last year, Karl Anthony Towns, right? Like, teams are in training camp and deals are happening. So could that happen with Giannis and the Bucks? Sure. But as we said, you know, the Eastern Conference is wide open. I do know that Giannis's preference has always been to remain in Milwaukee for the entirety of his career. And if you're Giannis and you're looking at it, you might say, oh, yeah, if I find my way to the Knicks or the Heat, then, yeah, we're a shoo-in to get to the finals. But being the competitor that Giannis is, he might be looking around at the East and saying, hey, look, Tatum is not going to be in my way. Halliburton is not going to be in my way. I can probably take these guys and, you know what, go out there and get me one or two guys with a mid-level exception and maybe make a trade around the edges of the roster, bring back Brook Lopez. I could probably get this team to the finals again. So at this point from where I sit, I think the East being so wide open probably helps to strengthen Giannis's resolve more than it would deteriorate it. So my prediction would be that at least for the foreseeable future, he'll remain in Milwaukee.
NBA draft is Wednesday, and the offseason, I like to joke, the offseason is the second best season in the NBA.
Speaks up on
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it does. The playoffs are first, the offseason second, the regular season third.
Let's go Sixers.
Yeah, that's
Woo-hoo,
right, man. It's time to get some things done.
Man, we're back in there.
Mo, thanks, buddy. You're the best.
Take care, guys.
Yeah. Coming up next, we get to the Ravens. And the Ravens, a lot of people think it's Super Bowl or bust for the Ravens. I know the Ravens do. Can they run, take care of business at home? Can they run the table? We'll discuss next here on The Fan. Ravens in Super Bowl or bust mode. And part of getting the one seed would be taking care of business at home. And the Ravens famously, though, what they've been crushed early in the season by what the Raiders and Colts in back-to-back years.
Gardner Minshew.
Sorry, they've been Minshewed.
Can't beat that guy in September.
No, they cannot. And I'm looking at their schedule, and could they lose to an opponent they're supposed to beat early? This year, that would be the Cleveland Browns. Could they lose at home to the Browns? Alas, I don't think that'll happen. But can they run the table at home?
I will say, in looking back at this, they've only done it once, which just anecdotally felt
it's 2011.
Low to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
They flirted with it, some 7-1s. And obviously it was easier to do this before some years you had to play 9.
Yeah.
And they've mixed it up. But for a team that is thought of as having one of the best, and I'm not saying it's easy to do, and they play in a tough division, but I'd have thought it happened more than once.
But they've also famously kind of played with their food at home.
Yes.
You know, the Colts, the Raiders. How about that Dolphins game a few years ago where they had the big lead and gave it up?
They usually have, what, one or two losses. They always have a good home record. But yeah, it is
they've
crazy.
Lost at least two at home 5 straight years.
It's not a bad home record.
It's not a bad home record, but
if you want the one seed, all right,
you know, but I mean, wait, how many times do the Chiefs lose at home?
Not a lot.
Maybe once.
Sirianni beat them. I remember he was pumping his chest two years ago.
Antonio Pierce got him on a Christmas, but nobody got him for like a calendar year.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying this is all geared towards, right? We've got 6 weeks now until training camp starts or whatever, 4 weeks. Like everything,
July 22nd.
Everything's through the portal of how can this year be different than the others? It's going to sneak right up on you.
It is.
That's a month from yesterday.
Yes, or 2 months from the
is
month.
That, yes. Yeah. Is that 6 Sundays from yesterday?
Yes.
6 Sundays from yesterday.
Yeah. Or 5 from this coming.
Yes.
It opens on a Sunday. I who knows?
Both work.
Who cares?
Yeah. I can do some quicks.
So I'm going to go out on a limb and say they're not going to run the table at home because again they've been here 25 years or whatever.
July 22nd is a Tuesday.
But they better not lose more than one at home.
And this is a year where they have 9 home games as opposed to 8 as well. Do I expect them to run the table at home? No, because the history tells you that it just doesn't happen. But if you're looking at teams, look, division games.
But the last time they
tough.
Did it, what happened?
They got Cundiffed.
Yeah.
They got Cundiffed.
AFC title game.
Yeah. But look, Steelers
still
always
AFC
play them tough.
Yeah.
Cincinnati always plays them tough. And then you're looking at that Lions game. Those are the three that are the toughest home game.
See, now I'm not, because I'm looking at that Jets game in November. That's the kind of game they lose. That's the kind of game they lose.
Yeah.
Like Justin Fields rushes for like 120 yards and 2 touchdowns, and they lose to the Jets.
I'm not going there. I'm thinking more like it's Cincinnati at home or something.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, Pittsburgh, I think it's more like that.
Yeah, division game.
Yeah, I
think they kind of got Pittsburgh's number now, but like Cincinnati. That scares me.
They play Stroud and the Texans really. But the Rams from a couple years ago.
That was a tough game.
But West Coast team playing on 1 o'clock window is always tough.
I mean.
But the Bears.
They better not. I mean, again.
That's the kind of game they lose, though.
That's coming off a bye, though.
Yeah, Harbs is good off a bye. Yeah, Harbs is good
off a bye.
I think he's good winning. I'm not so sure about covering.
All we care about is winning. Yeah, we're talking about running the table at home. That's a different conversation.
I felt as a public service announcement.
It's a different conversation.
Yeah, it's not running the table against the spread. Mm-hmm. That's a different conversation.
No, but if you do that, then you're probably really good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because they're going to be favored in probably all these.
Then you probably are the one seed. Yeah, it does, though, to Gigi's point. Sometimes it's harder to get up for some of those ones where the whole world thinks you're going to just show up and beat the snot out of somebody, and everybody's going to pad their Pro Bowl resumes, and everybody's going to pad the back of their football cards. And look, the Steelers are clearly, if some luster had fallen off that rivalry, and it's fair to say maybe it had.
A little bit, yeah.
Like, they think they got a real quarterback now. I mean, we can debate it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But by their standards, they think they got a real quarterback.
They got their ass kicked here twice in rapid succession not that long ago.
The idea that Lamar can't beat the Steelers is that's over.
Yeah,
that parable's been put to rest. I got to think Mike Tomlin's going to have them foaming at the mouth for.
Well, what's interesting about those matchups is that
so late in the year.
Yeah, the first game's December they play Pittsburgh.
I just want to say, as a public service announcement, it's going to take a lot of ayahuasca for Mike Tomlin to get Aaron Rodgers to foam at the mouth for anything. I just don't see that.
I would think he would be one of the people with the stuff he puts in. Like, he might mix his stuff. I mean, he might do that for you.
Yeah.
Tomlin might just show up to practice foaming at the mouth before Tomlin even spoke to the team.
Is Rodgers still going to be up for that game? 42-year-old?
I don't know. I think the ball's coming out fast, Ben. I'm thinking Big Ben.
He's going to look like Big
Bone.
Ben at the end.
I meant to say, I think the ball's coming out fast, Bone, like with Big Ben.
Yeah.
I think we're back to that.
Yeah, he's not going to want to take hits.
A lot of throws behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. Survival mode.
Yeah. I just wonder if we see Aaron Rodgers in both Steelers games, because they're both December, like the first one's December 7th. Do we see Aaron Rodgers in both those games?
That's how many Sundays?
That's a lot from of Sundays.
Yesterday.
Lot of,
yeah. How yeah. many Sundays away from yesterday?
That's a lot like of Sundays.
20-some yeah. Sundays, you think?
My thought was 24, but I'm like, geez, I'm so bad. I don't even know. That might be way off.
Yeah, that hadn't even hit my...
The first game's week 14, so that's at least 14 Sundays.
Yeah.
Right, that's 14 Sundays from like around Labor Day.
Yeah.
And then how many between now and Labor Day?
We haven't hit July 4th yet.
It's 20 something.
Yeah. I'll tell you this, though. That Steelers game here is going to sneak up on somebody in this room.
Oh, it will.
It won't be me. And then Christmas. It won't be Bone. Somebody. It just sneaks up on
you. It does. Let me get past this Sunday or this Saturday for that matter.
Yeah.
God forbid.
Big week for Gigi.
Yeah, man. Jonas Schaefer is going to join us to talk Ravens coming up at 4 o'clock. But coming up next, we get back to the Orioles. And the rotation ain't what it was, say, a couple weeks ago. Time for some necessary roughness. What is reasonable to expect from this rotation as we move forward? That's next here on The Fan.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.